The cuisines like Indian, Sri Lankan are good as it is. It's been delicious forever. It's just about the perspective that's changing.
This is the Deep in the Weeds podcast. I'm Anthony Huckstep. There's been a wonderful burst of Sri Lankan restaurants across the culinary landscape in recent years, and one dish in particular has been prominent in many, the hopper. Ronith Alicati is the head chef of Hopper Joint in Prahran, Melbourne. Ronith, how are you?
Hi, Huck. I'm good. How are you?
I'm good. It's great to get you on the show. You're a big part of a very exciting new restaurant there in Melbourne. How are things going at the moment?
Oh, yeah, it's super exciting, and it's been super hectic as well. Opening a new restaurant was a first for me, and I think I've done a decent job. But yeah, it's been pretty busy as we opened. Yeah,
that's great to hear, because you know, as consumers have sort of tightened their belts a little bit, and they're not out spending as much, it's good to hear that things are busy. What are things like in Melbourne though, generally at the moment?
It is quite slow, to be honest, and just in general, people are going out less, including myself. We just think twice before going out and see, because it's quite expensive even to buy groceries now. But it's cheaper than eating out, so it is a bit quiet, but the weekends are pretty good everywhere.
Has that affected how you sort of created the menu and sort of what the offering is at the moment?
For sure. We've definitely priced it quite moderately and very approachable to people, even though it's quite a beautiful design place and could come off as like a expensive place. But I think the price right now is quite moderate, and it's accessible for many.
It's been really beautiful to see the Sri Lankan restaurants popping up across the culinary landscape, and Hoppers have been at the forefront of that. Tell us a little bit about Hopper Joint and sort of what you're doing there.
So Hopper Joint is primarily going to be focusing on hoppers, and it is quite a complex dish in itself. And while before I took up the job, I had a lot of experimenting and trialing, and to do so many hoppers with so many numbers was quite a challenge. But we've finally come across a recipe which is working for us. And it's essentially a rice pancake which is fermented overnight, and then it's like adjusted with some coconut cream, and the batter keeps changing throughout service, so you need to be on top of it and just keep adjusting it and tasting it every time.
So tell us a little bit about the experience of the hopper, because people get an array of things on the table and then the hoppers come out as the evening goes. Is that sort of hard to manage? Tell us about that whole process.
So, right now, just to get a system in place, it took us probably a week, which was essentially friends and family night. And we had to have the hopper batter ready from the previous night and mix it at the right time in the morning so it's ready for service. And then based on the weather also, the batter changes. And we tried holding the hoppers during service. It doesn't hold well, so it has to be made before, 2 minutes before the order's away. And that was quite challenging, because if you have 80 people sitting, everyone's having hoppers, it catches up to you. So we found a way where we can hold them for around 5 minutes. And that's kind of how we are managing right now. And it seems to be working.
What's some of the accompaniments? How does the sort of eating experience work when you're having hoppers?
So hoppers has to be eaten with hands to get the full experience. And everyone gets a choice of two curries, and two sambals are standard, which is sini sambal and pol sambal, essentially onion chutney and coconut chutney for simpler terms. And both of them are quite generously spiced, the sambals. And the choice of curries is, I think, a quite decent offering. We have 9 choices, which are quite unique and not your common curries. So we have like the cashew curry, pineapple curry, and okra curry. These are actually the most popular amongst the, like it's more sometimes more popular than the meat curries as well. So that's the choice. So everyone who sits down has to have a hopper set. They get a plain hopper, egg hopper, and a choice of 2 curries. And the plain hoppers are unlimited.
Tell us about sort of the curries. Where did you get the recipes and inspiration from for them?
So the curries are actually a collaboration of Brem's mom's curries and me trying to implement it in a restaurant setup. So it's we've kind of found a balance of how we can manage those flavors and also make a big volume in that kitchen. And I'm not sure if I can share the recipes, but it's mostly all Brem's childhood memories and some of the classic Sri Lankan curries, which are quite, not very common, I would say. So stuff like pineapple curry was new for me as well. And essentially the whole process of making a curry is quite, if you know how to make a Indian curry, you would know how to make a Sri Lankan curry and vice versa.
Has it had its challenges sort of delving into that and then creating them so they work in a restaurant setting?
Yes, it had its challenges because the restaurant is, if you've seen the photos, it's quite open and the curry kitchens are quite messy usually. I worked in some of the traditional ones. So it was quite challenging to make sure that the whole process is streamlined and doesn't look like it's a messy kitchen, obviously, for one. And also, consistency is quite important because curries, as you know, if any grandmom or mom makes it, they don't have a recipe. So making a recipe for that so that everyone who makes it it tastes the same was the biggest challenge, I would say.
Well, I want to explore in greater detail what you're doing there at Hopper Joint, but take us back to when you were young. Whereabouts did you grow up and what sort of role did food play?
Yeah, so I was born in Karnataka in a small village town. And it's called Dharwad. And my childhood was, so my parents moved to Pune, which is a city in Maharashtra. That's where I spent most of, that's where I grew up. So Pune was a good place for, I would say it's like the Melbourne of of India. And we, food was a really important part of my life as is for most Indians because most of our food is eaten at house and we don't really go out to eat. And most of our favorite food is made in the house. And for me, it's it was quite impactful because right from my granddad to grandmom, everyone used to cook and everyone made better dishes than each other. So it was always like a competition at home. And it was great because I was always exposed to delicious food and that kind of had an impact, I guess. And my dad's mom was always into watching TV shows and we had just limited access to TV back in the day. And there was just one chef who used to come on TV and no one else. So grandmom is always like, you have to be that chef who comes on TV someday. So I was like, yeah, sure. That kind of triggered the passion for food. And I was always in the kitchen tasting stuff because always smelling different smells. And it was always a part of me. And then once I realized I could make a career from that, I chose that path probably in 8th grade. Yeah.
Are there any dishes from your youth in the sort of from your grandparents or your parents that you can tell us about that you have fond memories of?
Yes, for sure. I still go back and still crave those dishes. It's my granddad's lamb chops. So he used to do mutton chops, which is essentially the loin of the... It's a rack, so basically a mutton rack, which is quite small and very small loin on the meat, but it's super delicious the way he cooks it. And it's just slowly marinated, very simple, four ingredients dish, but super delicious. So that's one of the dishes. I always go back, and if I see my granddad, I have that for sure. He always makes a batch for me anyways. And then grandmom's side as well. She does amazing pickles, and she makes her ghee always. So every time we visit, there's always like 2 kilos of ghee just made for me to take back home. So a lot of small dishes and condiments, and always something new when I go back.
You mentioned you were quite young when you realized a career as a chef was in your future, but tell us about the first steps. What was it like for you when you first sort of entered the industry?
I think it was like quite common in Indian households that time to pursue engineering or doctor during my time. And I did that. I was, and I didn't clear the exams. I actually, no one knows this, but I actually didn't clear my year 11. And then I had to do an external exam for in accounts, which kind of led, I told, hey, dad, look, this is not going to work. I want to do this. I really want to try this out. Like, I'll do hospitality management. And that's that was very supportive of them. Like, he said, he gave me a chance to try science and pursue the engineering, but I was not really interested. And then they supported me for to go to Goa, where I actually did my hospitality management, and kind of realized it was the right move. And since then, I've been super excited about what I was doing.
In the early years, what were the sort of really important venues and people that you worked with?
So after Goa, I was actually involved in a opening of a restaurant in Pune, my hometown, which was run by a chef who trained in Cordon Bleu, Sydney. So he came back to Pune, and he was from Pune as well. So we opened this cafe / bistro kind of place, and I was involved in that place. And now it's an institution. It's been there for 12 years, and they're still doing great. So it's an institution in the city where I am. It's always a great place to be, great vibe. And it was the first of its kind. We were the first one to do macarons and like small items which are new for the city. So it kind of is still doing the same thing, but delicious food, simple food. And always great to visit back. And my recent trip back, I helped do a few of the menu dishes, and it was, yeah, super exciting. And after that, he kind of convinced me to stay back and told me that don't spend money on culinary school. But I did exactly that and came to Melbourne.
Ah, well, what lured you to Australia and Melbourne?
Australia has always been I think the marketing for food was pretty good overseas. I would say it has always been on my radar, because whenever I try to search about food or fine dining restaurants, it used to always be like Key, and I had Dinner by Heston in Melbourne. So all of these restaurants kind of attracted me to go to Australia, and Melbourne in particular, because I really wanted to work at Dinner by Heston, because that back in the day I was just following everything that he was doing, and kind of wanted to try to get a job there, but I eventually never got it. And that's how I went through Cordon Bleu. I applied for Cordon Bleu. It was a new institution in Melbourne, so I was probably the second batch that was in Melbourne. And yeah, after that, opportunity just came, and I took them as they came. And the first big step was obviously going to Gagan in Thailand, which was kind of, I would say, a big career change. And like the thought process of how a restaurant should be, what food should be, changed for me completely. And yeah, that was through. So I had to do an internship after 9 months of studies in Melbourne. And I went on Instagram and I messaged Gagan and he replied, which was crazy. So I showed that to my, the guy who organizes internship in Gordon Blow. I showed that, like, look, I have an opportunity. Yeah. So I said, I need to do this internship here. So that's how I got my first key job, which was a high profile restaurant doing all the new stuff. Yeah. After that, I had a lot of good opportunities, and I actually met a chef in Gagan who got me a job at Amaru, which had just opened up. So after Gagan, I did half of my internship in Amaru. And yeah, after that, I was pretty much wanted to be a fine dining chef and still want to, but it's changing now. So
take us into the kitchen of Amaru. What did you take from your time there?
Amaru was super intense. It was only 30 covers, but so much detail and so many techniques that I learned there I still use today. And just the combination of flavors, I think Clinton is quite genius with that, because he used to use a lot of vegetables for desserts, which is quite common in India. And I loved it because he had a potato dessert when I was on, and that was one of the most delicious dish I had. I was on the snack station, which was quite challenging. And it's my favorite thing to have on the menu, but not the favorite thing to prep. It's that's probably the most challenging section. And I think I was happy I was on that section, because I always like a bit of challenge in the kitchen. And yeah, it was very, I would say, very systematic, small kitchen, just four chefs, including Clinton, and doing 30 covers. But doing so much prep for it was quite a new thing for me as well. So learned a lot from.
You've worked at some pretty incredible restaurants in Melbourne. What have been the really important venues and people that you've worked with your time there?
Yes. I think the most impactful was Marion Sunda. So Marion was probably the most time I've spent in any kitchen, because when I started exploring the dining scene, I decided to myself that I'll spend 1.5 years in each kitchen around Melbourne. And because eventually I want to open my own stuff, and then I'll see how people are doing, how the business is running. But Marion, I spent almost 2.5 years, because I think the leadership in Marion was the best compared to all the other venues I worked in. And I learned a lot from in terms of basic cooking and basic culinary skills, understanding flavors, how to organize a kitchen, how to train staff. And I still consult one of my head chefs from Marion for my, like, just general advice in the kitchen. And they're more than happy to help. So Marion was really good. And Sunda was quite... So when Khan was in Sunda, he has an amazing concept of flavor. And... very similar to what I want to do with Indian food someday, because I have all these ideas written down, and then I was seeing Khan's kitchen. I was like, oh wow, this is similar to what I've written down, but this is the Indian version of it. So I really enjoyed working there, because just the food was probably one of the most delicious food I had. And no, sorry. After that, another venue that really was impactful was a short term in Lake House, which was classic French. But due to some personal reasons, I had to leave. And but that was quite. We got a lot of advice from Ala, and what an amazing person to talk to, because when she speaks, it's like just advice, and so much knowledge. And yeah, that was a short experience, but really good, good experience.
Ala is a legend of the industry. What's do you have any stories of sort of what she is like and what impact it had on you?
It was just the amount of knowledge and like the way she handles every situation, even at that, like not even being in the kitchen, she knows exactly what is happening and exactly what each chef needs. And just the way she handles the whole situation is what I was always admiring, and how she understands the issues. She, like during my time, she had a solution for every problem. If it's personal, if it's business, she had a solution. So that's incredible.
How much have you changed since sort of becoming part of Melbourne and the Melbourne hospitality scene over the last sort of decade?
I feel I've changed quite significantly, because when I approached food, because back in India, when I started working as a chef, I used to do 6 days unquestioned, and just because I love it, because that's what I wanted to do. It's not right, but that's how I wanted to work. And just going forward, there's like after coming to Melbourne and seeing how the chefs work here and what the culture is, it's changed a lot about the perspective of food, the perspective of the business, and mostly about what kind of food I want to cook in the future. And like I love fine dining, and I really want fine dining to stay around and be sustainable and be like good for the work-life balance. I'm sure there's a way to do that, because right now there isn't a way, because all the chefs have to work dinners, everyone has to do those many hours, everyone's on a slightly lower wage than they're supposed to be, because I have friends who are sous chef levels, but they're doing CDP jobs in fine dining restaurants, just because that's how it operates. So all of these factors, someday I hope I want to find a solution, or someone finds a solution for it. So just while I've started this current role, I'm trying to implement all of that into reality and see how we can, like, I'm obviously working with Jason and seeing what's best for the business and for the chefs, and kind of having that balance.
How did the opportunity at Hopper Joint come about?
I was actually in touch with Jason. So I was actually, we met once at Entrecote. I was telling him about my, so I had this pickle going during lockdown, and I just gave him a pickle. I'd actually shared the pickle with Danny, and then he saw me on that post, and then he contacted me like, hey, how are you going? And I just told him like, do you want to try some pickles? So this is the pickle which my grandmom used to make, and we had a few excess lemons which I made a pickle and just gave out to friends. So that's how I met him. Then I told him my plans, like, look, I want to open an Indian restaurant, and this is how this is my plan, this is what I would plan to do. And then that's when he told me that he's planning to open a Sri Lankan restaurant. This was about a year back. And then while that was happening, I tried to open my restaurant, but it's not as straightforward and easy as it looks. So last year was actually just inspecting properties, and I almost put down a deposit for a venue, but I got good advice from a few of my friends, and business people saying that just hold off, do some other job till then. There will be opportunities, but don't go right now. Right now is not a good time. And I just recently just seeing articles of so many restaurants closing, and I was happy I made that decision to not go ahead. And Jason, I told Jason, look, my business thing is not happening. Are you still looking for a chef? And then he was. And that's how we, and then I told him, like, yeah, look, this is my experience. And he was more than happy with my experience. He had more confidence in me than myself. And then we kind of did a lot of trials and errors, and then I finally took it up.
What's it been like cooking Sri Lankan food? Indian is quite different. Has it had its challenges?
Yes, for sure. And the main challenge was to get the flavor profile right. And it can be slightly challenging with in terms of because it's almost some people might not like me saying this, but if you know French cuisine, you can kind of cook Italian cuisine, and if you know Italian, you can kind of cook French, because the ethos of making the stock and making, like, having that stock base, having your different bases, and then combining that into a dish is the whole concept of the cuisine. And it's very similar with Indian and Sri Lankan, that having that spice marinade, having that spice blend in the right amount, and then adding the right ingredients at the right time. Because if you add your ginger, garlic in the wrong time, it's going to affect the whole flavor. So that is all quite similar in terms of in making the curry. And just having that different flavor profile was, so obviously with the help of a few, with Brem's mom, and we've hired a few Sri Lankan chefs who have experience with the curries. So it's like a collaborative effort. And then I feel the flavor profile of the curries are quite good. And I think it's better in some ways because we don't use as much meat in India, but Sri Lankan curries have a lot of meat, which is quite delicious. So we have like pork, the dry pork curry is absolutely delicious. And we have the beef curry as well, which is similar to the dark roasted curry powder flavor. So, and lots of new techniques which could be applied to some of the Indian dishes, and room for experiment. That's what I saw. But we're obviously keeping it traditional. And it hasn't been as challenging to replicate the flavor as I thought. And I think now we are kind of finding a foot to what the system is.
Jason Jones is a bit of a legend of the Melbourne hospitality scene. Do you have any stories of what he's like to work with?
Yes, he's absolutely passionate about what he does, and I love it. It's very it's similar to how I'm passionate about the food and making sure everything is as it should be and up to the standard it should be. He's very particular about everything else about the business, including the food. But to see him on the floor every night of the opening month, like this month, it's quite inspirational that he's he really cares about what he's doing and making sure every customer gets what he's trying to create. And I think he's the only the slightly bigger restaurateurs who have taken that bold step to open a traditional restaurant, because a lot of restaurants that are opening are Italian, French, Middle Eastern. There's no this level of Indian or Sri Lankan, South Asian restaurant. So he's taken that step, and I really applaud him for that.
You mentioned that prior to this gig, you were looking for a venue for of your own. Tell us a little bit about what you want to do and how your expression of Indian may transpire when you do find a venue.
Yes. So I've always wanted to do a more refined Indian menu, focusing on the regions of India that's not explored as much, and also including dishes from various households, which are not very common. And I found that in my recent trip that I had like 3 or 4 exceptional meals where I've never had these dishes before. And some of them were in my grandmom's house. So having like those dishes on the menu, which will, so it would be more towards the fine dining side and more of a tasting menu style. That's my dream. And also shedding light on those unexplored parts and unexplored cuisine of India. So that'll include a lot of research, and I have heaps of notes and heaps of friends who want to be a part of this in India. So they're more than happy to explore this, document this with me. So at some stage in my career, that's what I want to do, and like really go back, spend good time exploring these areas. Because like even a small dish like in my recent trip to my grandmom's house was a quite complex dish where it had like 5 steps over 3 days just to get one dish. And I was like, this is what I used to do at Amaru, and this one is more complex and it's just one component of the dish. So just shedding light, like everyone says grandmom's cooking is the best and stuff, but how good is it actually, and how technical, and is it actually worth all that grandma's cooking is the best? And I feel absolutely it is, at least from what I've seen. And that's what I want to shed light on as well. So having that built into the story of the restaurant and is my dream.
What do your family think about the success that you've had in Australia's hospitality scene?
They absolutely, they're super happy and proud. And I always kept telling my dad, like, it's good that I didn't do that engineering course you're pushing me to. And we always have a laugh about that. And yeah, they're super happy, and they just want to come here and try the stuff I'm doing. I had a chance to do a pop-up in Pune last year where dad and my brother got a chance to eat. Mom was busy, she couldn't come, but she had a chance to taste it when she was in Melbourne. That's another story. But they loved it. That was their first fine dining experience. And they were like, oh, this is what you've been talking about. Because there's nobody knows what's a degustation in my family. And nobody knows what's a fine dining, or why is it. For them, it's like the mainstream media that portrays it as just expensive food and small portions. So that's what they think it is anyways. But when they had my degustation in Pune, they were pretty happy and they were so impressed, and they were pretty proud as well. So I was happy with that.
Well, you're making an incredible impact there in Melbourne. What do you love about what you do?
I think it's mostly honesty in the food and keeping it to its roots, and not changing too much, because I feel like cuisines like Indian, Sri Lankan are good as it is. It's been delicious forever. It's just about the perspective that's changing of people and how they're looking at it. And it does take a lot of time to make a good curry, and we are making 9 of them. So hopefully people see the effort that's going into making it and how much time it takes, because It is. I wouldn't say it's like an easy cuisine to learn or make. And for me, it's more of being honest and sticking to the roots of the cuisine. Yeah.
Well, it's been an absolute honor to have you on Deep in the Weeds today, and I can't wait to see what you do from here. Ronith, please keep in touch, and we'll catch up again soon.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Han.
This is the Deep in the Weeds podcast. I'm Anthony Huckstep. Stay tuned as we take a deep dive into the lives of the incredible people who ply their trade in the food and hospitality sector. Special thanks to executive producer Rob Locke for making this all happen. Follow us on Instagram at Deep in the Weeds Podcast or email us at podcast@deepintheweeds.com.au. Stay safe and be well.